It's Monday, May 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President Obama makes an historic visit to Vietnam.
The United States conducted a precision airstrike that targeted Taliban leader Mullah Mansour.
The U.S. drone strike kills a Taliban leader. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Myanmar amid continuing sanctions. Taiwan has a new president. What does it mean for relations with China? And also a very public music battle. It's all on today's International Edition. President Obama is in Vietnam, 41 years after the end of one of the most divisive wars in American history, and experts say ties between the United States and Vietnam have never been closer. VOA Cindy Sain is traveling with the president and says much discussion has been held about lifting a decades-long arms embargo.
All eyes are focused on whether or not President Obama will lift the decades-long arms embargo. And the Vietnamese are asking that he lift the embargo. They're saying, look, we need to stand up to China, which has been increasingly aggressive in the region, on the border and in the South China Sea. And also, there seems to be some internal debate within the Obama administration, with some high-ranking people in the Defense Department saying, yes, we need to bolster our ties with Vietnam. It's time to lift this embargo. But the sticking point is really concerns about human rights, which continue to be a concern.
President Obama's visit to Vietnam comes at a time when the Southeast Asian nation is seeking stronger ties with the United States, in part because of growing tensions with China. And there is hope among many Vietnamese Americans, especially the younger generation. They're optimistic that Mr. Obama's trip will help further the reconciliation between the two former foes. VOA's Elizabeth Lee tells us of a generational shift in views on relations between the U.S. and Vietnam, which is reflected in both countries.
Born in Vietnam and brought up in the U.S., Sunny Nguyen co-owns Seven Leaves Cafe, located in the heart of Little Saigon. It's where the largest population of Vietnamese outside of Vietnam calls home. This cafe blends Western design with Asian-influenced food and drink.
Thank you.
This fusion reflects most of the cafe's customers, who are generally younger Vietnamese Americans. Many of them are optimistic about President Obama's visit to Vietnam.
I think it's important for any president to go ahead and foster better relationships with different countries.
Back then, a lot of things were different than they were these days. So I think that fostering a relationship with communist country doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing.
This younger generation says it's about mending the wounds of the past, stemming from the Vietnam War and the communist takeover of the country.
We lost everything. So there is, you know, for my parents' generation, it's much more vivid. And those that live here in Little Saigon, it's a scar.
Many in the older generation are doubtful that much will change in Vietnam and even frown at the prospect of closer ties. But the younger generation of Vietnamese Americans has a more hopeful view, says Dong Do, managing editor of Noik Viet, the largest Vietnamese newspaper outside of Vietnam.
With the internet, now with more opportunity, you know, a lot of young Vietnamese people, they went back to Vietnam for charity work. So, and also some take Vietnamese class.
California native Alvin Bui traveled to Vietnam to use his Vietnamese language skills. He explains via Skype.
You connect with other Vietnamese youth in creating a better future for Vietnam, right? So figuring out what they're thinking in their own language, like trying to get in their own head.
Sunny Nguyen also dreams of a better future for Vietnam.
I'm Vietnamese, and I do have a deep care, and you know, and I know Vietnam is still a third world country. Majority of the people are poor, and you know, I want to be able to make a change in the world.
The consensus of the younger Vietnamese Americans here seems to be that Obama's trip is an opportunity for both countries to heal from the past and start a new chapter in history.
And there's much more to Elizabeth Lee's report, including video, which you may watch at voanews.com. Taliban leader Mullah Akhtar Mohammad Mansour was killed over the weekend, and his death got people talking about the terrorist organization and the U.S. drone strikes overseas. Our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, joins me here in the studio to give us the snippets of what's being said online. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. So Afghan officials confirmed that Mansur was killed in a U.S. drone strike Saturday near the Pakistan-Afghanistan border. He led the terrorist group since July 2015. Fox News posted its article on Facebook earlier Sunday and already received more than 1,500 comments and nearly 2,000 shares. One of the top comments reads like this: "Yay, a whole lot of innocent people will not be tortured and killed for no reason. But I am curious, is it now okay for President Obama to kill the terrorists while he condemned President Bush for trying to do the same?" Nearly 500 people liked that comment. Another popular comment was on how the Afghan authorities confirmed that the Taliban has already named a new leader. Now let's move on to the New York Times. It reported the U.S. military is still assessing whether the leader was killed in the strike. It posted the article on Facebook late Saturday.
Interesting. Well, did it receive similar reaction to its story?
Well, I would say no. For the television channel, many comments were directed at condemning the Taliban and what they perceive as the Obama administration's lackluster job at fighting global terrorism. But to the New York Times Post, people who left comments seemed to be more concerned with their perceived notion of the Pakistani government's support of terrorism and anti-Muslim sentiments in the West, especially in the United States. One of the most liked comments reads like this: 99% of the time when one sees a person with a turban, they are not Hindus, not Muslims, and get this, not genies, and certainly not terrorists. They are Sikhs. That comment refers to past instances in the States where anti-Muslim individuals and groups targeted Sikh Americans. Jim, back to you.
Thank you so much, G. And we will have more on the drone strike coming up on International Edition. You may tweet your questions and comments to @VOA_IE. And if you like, tag myself and G on those tweets. We're @VOA Stevenson and @G Abby Lee. Here are some of the top stories that are trending now in Asia that we're following. 500,000 in Bangladesh flee Cyclone Ranu, at least 24 killed. Taliban suicide bomber hits NATO convoy near Kabul. Vietnam sees strong growth despite incomplete reforms. G7 says consumers' reluctance to spend is causing economic dilemma. Hopes of reviving mountain tourism soar in Nepal. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on the VOAnews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has hailed Myanmar's transition to democracy, but urged its new civilian-led government to continue its work on implementing key reforms meant to improve developments and human rights. Kerry's visit came days after Washington lifted various financial and trade sanctions imposed on the country when it was under military rule. Bans on scores of other individuals and groups, though, remain in place. Aung San Suu Kyi and Mr. Kerry responded to questions about the sanctions and to the use of the term Rohingya, which Myanmar has asked not to be used.
If our well-wishers are not ready to cooperate with us, it will make our task that much more difficult, which is not to say that we're going to back away from it. We will still accept it as our responsibility, and we will try to do the best we can to resolve the problem, to the benefit of both communities.
The name issue is obviously very sensitive. At the same time, we all understand, as a matter of fact, that there is a group here in Myanmar that calls itself Rohingya. We understand that. And we've used that term ourselves sometimes. But what the minister and I talked about today is very much in line with what she has just said, and that is that what's critical to focus on is solving the problem.
Taliban are now improved or set back.
I'm not afraid of sanctions. We'll get over this, and I'm sure that the time will come soon when the United States will know that this is no longer the time for sanctions.
The key to the lifting of the sanctions is really the progress that is made within Myanmar in continuing to move down the road of democratization.
Aung San Suu Kyi, who serves as Myanmar's foreign minister and de facto leader since her political party won historic elections in March, says she welcomes the scrutiny that is inherent with the remaining sanctions. Local passerbys in Pakistan near the Afghan border watching a burning car that was hit by a drone. That video is on our VOANews.com website. The Afghan intelligence agency confirming that Taliban leader Mullah Akhtar Mansour was killed in a U.S. airstrike. Secretary of State John Kerry.
The United States conducted a precision airstrike that targeted Taliban leader Mullah Mansour in a remote area of the Afghanistan-Pakistan border region. And Mansour posed a continuing imminent threat to U.S. personnel in Afghanistan, to Afghan civilians, Afghan security forces, and Resolute Support Coalition members across the country.
Pakistan says it was informed by the United States after the drone strike was carried out, but lashed out at Washington for violating its sovereignty. Islamabad did not immediately confirm that Mansour was killed. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said on Sunday Mansour was targeted because he posed an imminent threat and was directly opposed to peace negotiations. Taliban officials have privately confirmed the death of their leader but are reluctant to be identified, saying any final determination will be made by the group's leadership council. Coming up on International Edition, a tense musical relationship continues and it's going to be put on stage shortly. But first, on Friday, Taiwan inaugurated its new president, Tsai Ing-wen. Her pro-independence Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP, won landslide presidential and parliamentary elections earlier this year. DPP triumphed over the Nationalist Party, or KMT, which had spent the last 8 years developing ties with Beijing. International Edition's Sarah Williams spoke with Michael Mazza. He's a research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, about whether Tsai's call for positive dialogue with Beijing is a contradiction of her party's following her party's win over the KMT.
No, I don't think it's a contradiction. You're right that she was elected, at least in part, due to concerns over the previous administration's approach to China, concerns that China was gaining undue influence in Taiwan. Tsai Ing-wen and the DPP recognized that the relationship with China is extremely important. They're an important trade partner. Chinese businesses invest a lot of money in the mainland. But at the same time, they're going to be more cautious in how they approach that relationship.
And how will they be more cautious, do you think?
One of the ways they're going to do this is by being more transparent than the previous administration was in how they deal with China. So there's new legislation now which will provide for legislative oversight of the cross-strait relationship and oversight over any future bilateral agreements that the administration may pursue.
Well, meanwhile, shortly after the inauguration, China issued a statement. Its Taiwan Affairs Office said it warned Taiwan against pursuing independence. Could this be seen as Beijing trying to contain this new administration?
Sure. Ever since Tsai Ing-wen was elected and even prior to that, Beijing has been making strong statements, threatening statements about what Tsai Ing-wen should and should not do. Beijing certainly wants to box her in, wants to limit her options, wants to feel that any steps towards more formalized independence, any steps towards greater engagement with the international community won't happen without Chinese acquiescence, and that China will require Taiwan to behave in a certain way if it wants to achieve, again, a greater position on the international stage.
All this is happening as there are increasing tensions in the South China Sea, and there have also been tensions in the East China Sea as well. You know, this situation, this international situation in the Pacific, will be something that that Tsai Ing-wen will have to be dealing with in the coming months and years.
That's right. It's an increasingly challenging security environment in Asia, not just for Taiwan, but for all of America's friends and allies. But Taiwan here is particularly challenged in dealing with what we can call a more assertive and in some ways a more aggressive China, because it doesn't have the sorts of relationships that it would like to have with countries like Japan and the Philippines and others in Asia. Due to successful Chinese diplomacy, Taiwan is very limited in the sorts of relationships it has with other U.S. allies. That's something that could change with American leadership, but absent that, Taiwan is going to feel isolated in this environment, which is increasingly fraught.
Michael Mazza, research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. You can visit voanews.com for more on this story, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. And like us on Facebook while you're online, VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Alleged drugging, rape, and emotional abuse. That's at the center of a long-running legal dispute between recording artist Kesha and Kemosabe Records founder Dr. Luke, born as Lucas Gottwald. Dr. Luke, who has never been charged criminally, has repeatedly and vehemently denied Kesha's allegations. Now, Kesha is about to perform publicly at the Billboard Music Awards. This could be quite interesting as we hear from VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald.
This whole story is making my head spin because it seems like it's changing by the day. Dr. Luke and his Kemosabe imprint had barred Kesha from performing Sunday night at the Billboard Music Awards. However, on Thursday, they reversed course, and they said, okay, Kesha, go ahead. You can sing. Now, what happened originally is on Wednesday, the entertainment website TMZ reported that Kesha would use her performance at the Billboard Music Awards as a platform to speak out on her ongoing litigation against Dr. Luke. And when they heard that, Luke and Kemosabe said, okay, we're not going to let you perform.
They
rescinded permission because, of course, this is ongoing litigation. On Instagram, Kesha denied that she was ever going to mention Luke, Kemosabe, or the court case. She said she was going to pay tribute to Bob Dylan. And on Wednesday night in Los Angeles, Kesha and Ben Folds performed Bob Dylan's Don't Think Twice, It's All Right in Los Angeles. Now, they're scheduled to do that Monday night at the Billboard Music Awards, along with an introduction from Lena Dunham. In a statement, Kemosabe wrote that it had assurances now from Kesha, her representatives, and also the show's producers, Dick Clark Productions, that this performance would not be a platform to voice opposition to Dr. Luke or refer to the court case. Now, just to give people a little perspective, back in 2014, Kesha sued Dr. Luke for whom she had worked for a decade. She signed a contract with Kemosabe back when she was 18 years old. And she said that he had engaged in a systematic pattern of sexual and mental abuse toward her. And her mother, P.B. Siebert, confirmed this. Dr. Luke subsequently countersued, saying that Kesha and her mother were trying to extort him and get out of their record deal. In April, a judge in New York said dismissed Kesha's sexual harassment lawsuit against Dr. Luke. The judge said the contract doesn't appear to be irregular in any way and that Kesha must honor it. Since then, she has continued to allege abuse on the part of Dr. Luke. She recently released a single with Zedd called True Colors, which opened at number 74 on the Billboard Hot 100. Sony Records, which owns Kemosabe, has maintained all along that Kesha is free to work with whom she wants. But essentially, she still is employed by Dr. Luke because she can't get out.
Right, she's under contract still.
The record contract. Yeah. Now, the litigation continues to go through the court system, both in New York and California. This isn't likely to end anytime soon. Kesha's best bet is to stay in the public eye, where she has garnered a lot of popular sympathy. Mm-hmm. So, as of now, Kesha is allowed to perform on Sunday at the Billboard Music Awards.
Powerful in the world of music is our own Top 20 Countdown host, Ray McDonald. You can find him each and every week talking with us here and also on Twitter at
Ray on the Hits.
Follow Ray. Thanks so much, Ray, for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim.
Been listening to International Edition, and you can find us anytime you like at our website, voanews.com. While you're on Facebook, stop by VOA Now and like us, and you can follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Many thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Daryl Smith, and most of all you for spending some time with us. Thank you so much. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A healthy life is a gift and benefits not only individuals who are blessed with good health, but also their families and communities. Healthy individuals make up a stronger, more resilient workforce and are more likely to raise healthy children that become healthy adults, continuing the cycle. One of the easiest and most efficient ways to ensure good health is immunization of all children against the most common and most debilitating diseases, such as measles, pertussis, diphtheria, tetanus, and polio, to name a few. We know that immunization works. Since 1990, child mortality has dropped by half, and much of that is due to increased rates of immunization. Each year, immunization averts some 2 to 3 million deaths. Nonetheless, because one in every five children globally misses out on routine vaccinations, about 1.5 million people die needlessly of preventable diseases. As part of the Global Vaccine Alliance, or Gavi, the United States supports global efforts for accelerated introductions of new and life-saving vaccines in the world's poorest countries and supports efforts to strengthen national immunization systems, increase immunization coverage, and reduce equity gaps for children living in these poor countries. Through the investment in Gavi, the U.S. government is helping countries to end child deaths from the most common killer diseases, such as pneumonia, diarrhea, and meningitis. Gavi was founded with the objective of making affordable, life-saving vaccines available to countries that otherwise could not pay for them. But as countries' economies grow, long-term support must come from the countries themselves, said USAID's Deputy for Child and Maternal Survival Coordinator, Elizabeth Fox. Each and every year, 130 million newborns need to be immunized, or we risk losing the gains that we have made. We must also ensure that the world's 650 million children under age 5 have received their full course of recommended vaccines. An ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure, especially when it comes to a child's health. That is why immunization is a crucial part of any strong health system. As part of the Gavi partnership, the United States is committed to saving lives by helping to ensure that no child is left unprotected from disease.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.